Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
We start off by saying the Toronto Raptors are the NBA champions. That is something that has never been said on this show before, and it's being said right now. Here are a few more things that have never been said on this show. Much maligned, Kyle Lowry is an NBA champion. Mark Gasol is an NBA champion. Fred bleeping Van Vliet is an NBA champion. And of course, Kawhi is an NBA champion. But he already was an NBA champion. And he had a finals MVP to his credit, and now he's got two. And he sure as hell earned that second one. Man, there was so much that went down last night. I don't even have time to get to all of it in one take. I'm not even sure I can cover that first quarter in a single take. That first 12 minutes had pretty much everything, starting with Kyle Lowry, who was unconscious and gave them exactly the start that they needed in a barn that was peaking for the defending champs. Here are the first three baskets of the night. Lowry layup, Lowry three, Lowry three. This guy comes out on a personal 8-0 run. And even after Golden State scored, he had another three to make that score. Lowry 11, Golden State 2. So if you were wondering how the Raptors were going to show up after that painful ending to Game 5, Mr. Toronto Raptor had your answer. Kyle Lowry put that team on his back at the start. Not only that, he took over FVV's presser.
Kyle Lowry, Toronto Raptors. Fred, how does it feel to be a world champion?
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable to have guys like Kyle Lowry on your team who step up and go for 15 in the first quarter, you know, but he should have had 50. But, you know, he slowed down, so I just want to come out there in the second half and bail him out and try to help him for his legacy. You know, they kill my man all the time in the playoffs. He gets more slander than everybody I ever seen in the league. And so to have him be able to hold that trophy up tonight, that's what means the most for us.
Yeah, I'm not sure slander is the actual word, but he's right. That guy's taking an awful lot of heat, an awful lot of heat in the postseason. And he's also right when he says you could have had 50. I thought he was going to get 50. And then Lowry was joined by Pascal Siakam, who was draining threes. But because it was Game 6, Klay Thompson came up huge. Game 6 Klay. That's not just a nickname. That is a lifestyle. It's a way of life. He was keeping Golden State in that game. And then they broke out a 2-3 zone to confuse the Raptors. And if that were not confusing enough, Jamal McGlure was going viral for that shot of him standing behind the Raptors bench using a paper cup as a megaphone. And all of that was still in the first quarter. Hell, I was gassed myself after the first 12 minutes, and I was sitting in my living room on my couch. And the second quarter was just as good. Two elite teams going at each other, showing a hell of a lot of pride and leaving it all out there. And it didn't slow down in the third quarter either. There was Klay hitting an absolutely ridiculous three to tie it at 76.
Bad pass. Siakam out of bounds, saved it. Draymond's got it up to Klay Thompson. He'll pull up and fire for three. It's good! It's good! Klay Thompson off the dribble in transition has tied the game at 76.
And then shockingly, I guess at this point, and maybe it shouldn't be shocking, but at this point, the worst possible thing that could have happened did happen. Klay Thompson went down.
Takes it down the lane, falls down, lost the ball, turnover. Here comes Curry. Curry to Thompson. Thompson to the rim, goes up. He got fouled from behind, trying to dunk it. Danny Green with the foul. And Thompson's hurt. He's hurt.
His left knee. Tim, he is really hurt.
Danny Green fouled him as he flew in for a dunk. He fouled him from behind. How many more injuries must this team go through?
I just don't like the way he reacted when he was on the ground.
Man, that was horrible. That was absolutely terrible. The overhead camera that had that shot showed his reaction as he lay on the floor. It was gut-wrenching. He's helped off the court. He's headed down the tunnel, and you know he's done. I mean, you saw his reaction. You saw how awkwardly he landed. There was no way he was not done for the night. Except the next thing you know, he's turning around, and he's back out there on the floor, and he's knocking down free throws, shooting free throws, and making free throws with what turned out to be a shredded ACL. What an absolute legend. I mean, I'll get to the heart and the toughness of this Warriors team in a minute because they deserve their own take for pure toughness alone. But that was massive. That was an amazing moment, an incredible moment. Not only did he make the two free throws, he was headed back down the court to play defense. I mean, are you kidding me about that? Draymond later on said, are you kidding me about that?
But also with Clay, he would, if they would have let him stay out there, he would have stayed. That's just who he is. You see, he try to run back down the floor. Like, what are you doing? That's Clay. How many people is going to play with a hamstring injury? No one. Like, no one does that.
Like, Clay wanted to play game three with that hamstring injury. And to be honest, I was watching him last night and I was thinking to myself, how in the world is this guy moving as well as he is with a hamstring injury? In fact, he looks better to me now than he did prior to that hamstring injury. And then he goes out there and he shreds his knee and he wants to stay out there. Like he went back up the court. He's out there with a ripped ACL, but didn't want to leave the game. He told Steve Kerr he only needed a couple of minutes of rest and then he'd go back in. And yet moments later, you see him leaving the arena on crutches. I mean, what an absolute warrior in every single way possible. And this rap that the Warriors are a soft, finesse team is the biggest load of crap ever. More on that, though, a little bit later on. Meanwhile, Steve Kerr, he's got to figure out who the hell he has left. They were down KD. They were down Clay. Kerr starts the fourth quarter with Jonas Derebko, Quinn Cook, Sean Livingston, DeMarcus Cousins, and Draymond Green. And there were jokes. Lots of jokes. The Toronto Raptors were taking on the Santa Cruz Warriors. Did the Warriors have any walk-ons that they could suit up? And yet they just kept fighting and battling and grinding. Problem is, so did Toronto. FVV was hitting one soul-crushing shot after another. You can't tell me that guy's not a legend. If there's not a street in Toronto, named after him by the end of the weekend, someone's not doing their job. That dude was brass as hell. As Marc Gasol would later say, how can a guy like that even walk, given the size of his nads? Raptors took a six-point lead with under 3 minutes to go. Stop me if you've heard this before. The Warriors would not go away. Not dead. Can't quit. Steph Curry was getting triple-teamed. It was like he was back at Davidson, the way he was being defended. But Golden State still cut it to one, and then Toronto had to inbound and spin clock.
Lowry at the far hash mark. He's in the Coliseum sideline. Looking, waiting. Throws to the backcourt. Leonard has it. Chased by Iguodala. 16 seconds, 15 seconds. Leonard throws it to Danny Green. Green tied up by Draymond. Throws the ball away. It went out of bounds. He threw it away. It was intended for Siakam. It goes out of bounds. And Golden State will get the ball back with 9.6 to go.
Are you serious about that? After losing Clay, after everything they had been through, and losing like half their roster, Golden State still actually had a chance to rip this. Incredible. Again, not dead. Can't quit. They actually had a chance to rip that thing. Go ahead. Roll it.
Iguodala lobs the pass over to the far sideline. Green tracks it down to Curry for three. Misses. The ball is loose. It's picked up by Kawhi Leonard. Dribbled out near center. It's loose and on the floor.
They called a timeout. Draymond Green called a timeout. They don't have one left, so that's going to be a technical foul.
With 0.9 seconds remaining.
I mean, holy crap. That was a damn near perfect play. And it got Curry exactly the kind of look that he would have wanted. You could not ask for a better look for the guy that you wanted to shoot it. It just didn't go down. I mean, could you imagine if it had for the final shot ever in Oracle? That would have been the most Hollywood thing ever. Steph would have broke out the best shimmy ever, but it didn't go down. The ball was on the floor. The Warriors dove on it. They called timeout, a timeout that they did not have. And don't come in here with your oh so hilarious and not at all tired Chris Webber jokes. They had to do it. Lying on the ground at midcourt, the game was over if they don't call timeout. Calling that timeout, getting that technical, actually gave them the slightest of chances of keeping that thing alive. It just didn't happen. The Raptors finished it off. Well, they finished it off after the refs put their stamp on the final few seconds with a series of reviews that really sucked all of the life out of that moment. But here's what you cannot suck the life out of. The Toronto Raptors are NBA champions. Kawhi Leonard is your finals MVP. I would say that this team buried the narrative about the Raptors, but the fact is that happened a couple of series back. This is not even the same Raptors team. It's a totally different group than the ones that came before it. Quick piece of advice. Do not take a chance on getting stranded. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Get your battery tested. It's free of charge, and it's one of the many services that are available. If your battery needs to be replaced, the professional parts people will help you find the exact battery that you need for your car or your truck. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts. Better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Rex Hoggard, GC. We are joined now by Rex Hoggard. Rex, good to have you on. How are you?
Jim, let's do a Pebble Beach plus minus here. How many times have you played Pebble versus how many times I've played Pebble? I'm pretty sure you're going to beat me on this.
Yeah, I've played Pebble no times. Never.
Oh, then I got you by one then. All right, so I'm one up on you.
You win. You're always going to be one up on me. You one up me every time you come on the show, Rex. All right, then. Let's get to it. What about the conditions? We will get to the conditions on the course today. How would you describe the course yesterday?
Soft. Very soft. I think Rory McIlroy said it best when he said this is as benign you're going to see a U.S. Open, particularly at Pebble Beach. I mean, we all know how difficult this golf course would be. And part of that's conditions. I mean, part of that is the fog came in on Wednesday and it sort of hovered on Thursday and it remains on today. And it keeps the moisture in the ground. And I think the other part is we all know what's happened at the last few U.S. Open. And the USGA needed to get this one right. And if that means they're going to give up some low scores, and if a guy's going to get the 6-7 under par, so be it.
Rex Hoggard is joining us, and Rory said as much before the tournament. He said, quote, if they can't redeem themselves at Pebble Beach, then there could be a problem. As for the actual golf itself, Justin Rose was the first-round leader with a 665. That included birdieing the final three holes. How impressed were you with the way he played?
It was pretty amazing when you consider, number one, he was playing with Tiger Woods, and we all know what that comes with. I mean, there's an intense pressure. And then you also look, I mean, he played in the afternoon wave yesterday, and that was by far the more difficult of the two waves. These Poa greens, they get chewed up in the afternoon. The wind came up a little bit, and he proved why he's a U.S. Open player, why he's a U.S. Open champion. I mean, he did all the little things right you need to put up a score like that. And he put himself in good positions to make birdies. But I always go to the bigger deal in a situation like that is when you put yourself in a bad position, you find a way to make par, and that's what he did yesterday.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. Because you mentioned Tiger, let me follow you on that. How do you think he was feeling after his opening round 70?
There was optimism, and I think it was well-founded. I mean, the million-dollar question coming into this week is which Tiger would show up, right? The guy who looked so good at Augusta and won that 15th major, or the guy who missed the cut at the PGA Championship and clearly wasn't prepared. And everything about this week, his body language, the way he has spoken with the press, the way he prepared himself, it seemed to indicate it was closer to the guy who showed up at Augusta. And I think we saw that yesterday. He didn't have his best stuff. He put himself into some bad positions, made a big number early in his round, and he rebounded. And this is kind of what Tiger used to do, right? That, you know, even when he didn't have his best stuff, he kept himself in it. Now he's going to have to go low today, particularly when you have a guy like Justin Rose who seems to be on point, and you can't give up that much ground going into the weekend.
Rex Hoggard joining us from Pebble Beach. Rex, what about Brooks Koepka? He got off to a really nice start. He had birdies on four of his first six holes. What do you make of the way he opened his round?
I actually learned something about Brooks yesterday, and I can report this for a fact. He's not a machine. I saw him laugh. I saw him having a good time. It was shocking to me. You know, we've come to expect this sort of stoic Brooks Koepka out on the golf course. And after the rounds, he was actually in a good mood. He said he was very pleased with that round. And when you've done what he's done, winning four majors in the last eight Grand Slam starts, I think that gives you a perspective and a level of comfort that you really can't discount. And that's what we're seeing in Brooks right now. And we all know he loves playing with a chip on his shoulder, that he always wants to find that slight. And I find it fascinating that the slight this week is that everyone was talking about after Beth Page, Pebble Beach was going to be different. This was the kind of golf course that a mid-length guy could contend. And in his mind, I think Brooks is trying to prove the world wrong once again.
You know, things did not go as well for him after that fast start, but he still managed to come in at 2-under. You know, as you pointed out, he was in 46th after day one last year, so being in 16th was a big improvement. What is your sense as to how he deals with the pressure of majors?
It's so unique, and it's Tiger-esque, and I hate comparing anybody to Tiger because it's always patently unfair, and he's a once-in-a-generation player, but when you really look at what Brooks has been able to do in the major championships, he's able to find this sort of calm demeanor that other people don't have. And he's also able to sort of leverage what he does best against what everyone else does. He talked about it earlier this week. You know, we mentioned that the golf course USGA setups have come under a lot of scrutiny. You guys are doing a lot of complaining. That's not Brooks, because you got to go out and play. Maybe it's unfair, maybe it's not, but everyone's going to play. And in his mind, that's just one more thing that he can hold against the other players. And he feels like he probably has 10, 15 guys to beat. That's it.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. He's made that point before. He's done that math. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, Rory McIlroy came into the U.S. Open off that win in Canada. He shot a 68, Rex, yesterday. What was your sense as to how Rory was feeling about his round?
I picked Rory. Full disclosure this week, we had to do some picks, although I think I could have done a 1A, 1B, and 1C with him, Brooks, and DJ. And it's just coming off of a touchdown win last week in Canada. What he's done this year, 10 top 10 finishes and 13 starts, 2 victories. He has a U.S. Open. I think he's probably in the best place of everyone positioned now on the leaderboard. And I say that simply because he can do things that Justin Rose cannot over the course of the next 3 days. He can overpower a course if he wants. But as we've seen from Rory this season, he's not going to get overcome by the moment. He's not going to get ahead of himself. He's been very good this season about making sure that mentally he's as prepared as he always has been physically. And I think that's one of those elements that puts you over the top from being a good player to being a great player.
Yeah, Rex, all true, but he has not won a major since 2014. How much do you think that weighs on him right now?
Oh, I'm sure it does. I mean, when you look at what he did, he won those 4 majors. I did the math the other day in about a 2.5-year stretch. And it was very, very similar to probably the conversation we're having now about Brooks, right? Where suddenly Brooks is on this run and you can imagine where this is going to end. And at the end of his career, how many could he possibly have? And it's dried up. As you pointed out, it's been 5 years since then. And I think anybody's going to think about that. But if anyone is mentally prepared enough to be okay with it, to move on. I mean, Rory has really camped on this idea of incremental gain. We saw it earlier this season in L.A. He probably should have won that event. He probably could have easily gotten frustrated, and he did not, because he's in this particular mindset that as long as I keep making improvements, eventually the wins will come. And they've come in big events, the Players last week at the Canadian Open. They haven't come in the majors, but at this pace, it seems like it's just a matter of time for him.
All right, so Rex, what kind of a score are you expecting to see for the leaders on Sunday?
You have to believe, and we just had this long conversation about the USGA coming in this week with kid gloves. They don't want to push this over the edge. They need to make a good impression this week. But you have to believe that as the week goes on, the golf course is going to get more and more difficult. That being said, I don't think it'll be a normal U.S. Open Sunday. I don't think guys will be able to shoot even par, one over par, and still win. And a lot of factors come into play. The weather is going to impact that. If it stays cloudy, the golf course is just going to be soft. There's nothing you can do about it. And being a West Coast guy, it is amazing how good these greens are. I mean, everybody to a man who has played this event in the U.S. Opens, who plays annually in the Pro-Am in February, says that they're as good as they've ever been. And that's simply going to set up for low scoring.
It's going to be really interesting. He is a senior writer for GolfChannel.com, and he is part of Golf Channel's Live from the U.S. Open news coverage on site from Pebble Beach this week. It airs before and after live tournament coverage. He is Rex number 7, Rex Hoggard. Rex, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Always good to have you on.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
It's summertime, so you probably want to get into shape. And I would imagine you're also looking for new ways to get your cardio in between a busy schedule. I've got the best idea there is. The Peloton bike. I've got mine. I love mine. I've had it now for more than 2 years. Why do you think that Men's Health called the Peloton bike the best cardio machine on the planet? I'll tell you why. Because it's true. The Peloton bike is going to make you rethink the way you look at cycling classes. It's an immersive, empowering, heart-pounding cardio experience that you have to try to believe. I'm telling you, I was hooked. I was addicted the first time I did it. You can work up a sweat with world-class instructors riding right by your side. You can get real-time motivation and coaching from a roster of unique styles and personalities. Again, they're world-class. Now is the best time to get your Peloton. Peloton is offering a limited-time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get an amazing cardio workout from your home. Go to onepeloton.com. Use the promo code Rome and get started. onepeloton.com. Use my promo code Rome. I've now spent the better part of 3 weeks profiling the field, getting everybody set for next Friday. But of all the players that I have reset before the main event, not one of them has competed in as many smack-offs as this guy, if I'm not mistaken. In the 24 smack-offs that have gone back to 1995, Stevie Carbone has been in 19. I think he's got the record. My math, my data tells me that he has been in more of these things than anybody else. It's an amazing number. 19. He was in the first one. He was in the most recent one, and he took the entire thing down back in 1998. Last year was the 20th anniversary of his championship, and there was no way that he was not going to try to win the 2018 edition to try to bookend those two between 20 years. And the Thursday before the 24th Smack-Off went down, he phoned in with this RSVP.
I haven't done a tandem call in 20-plus years. I've been calling this show, and I'm here to tell you I'm not about to start now, I don't think. I'll talk to you tomorrow, Jim.
All right, so that piqued my interest. Not about to start right now, I don't think. I don't think. And then tomorrow came, Smack-Off 24, Friday, July 20th. I go to Stevie Carbone, and this is what happened.
Let's stop it with the gimmicks. I mean, some people look at last year's gimmick as, wow, how cool, he rounded up the old geezers from yesteryear. They had a little powwow. What a nostalgic moment. I, on the other hand, looked at it as like, great, you brought in 63 people into the studio that had a combined one Smack-Off title between them. Silk, which, no offense, might have been the worst call to ever win this thing. I mean, the hardest thing for me now, Jim, in these Smack-Offs is I'm old school. I've been around since the night show. I've been around long enough to remember when Hacksaw was piecing together fake interviews he claimed to do. And I still think to this day he thinks Napoleon Kaufman got his leg amputated. But the new school stuff, it's just, it's not fun for me anymore. I liked having rivals. Like, nobody talks about me now. Nobody cares about me. I had one rival back in the day. That was the Calvin Asian. I loved kicking that guy in the nuts during my phone calls about his balding or his weight gain or his radio career. I mean, Jesus, that guy was so fun.
Yeah. No, thank you, Steve. ABC's attorneys are online too. I got this. Jim, it's great to be back.
That was fun. That was a good time. That voice you heard at the end of that was Carbone's longtime rival, the five-time Smack-Off champ, Shawnee the Cablin Asian. The cameo of all cameos. The Cablin Asian had not been in a Smack-Off since he dropped the mic on a three-peat back in 07. So that was the holy bleep moment of last year. And it took second place only to Brad and Corona, who destroyed the entire country of Canada with one custom-made Speedo. What made the cameo so amazing was not that he brought back the Cablin Asian. No, what made it amazing is how much Carbone beefed with the Cablin Asian for over a decade in the jungle. No one ever expected the two of these guys to come together, to team up the way they did, ever. I mean, listen to the way Carbone used to talk about Sean back in 08.
Jim, I know the absence of the Cablin Asian in the Smack-Off has people talking. Should he be here? Should he not be here? Here's my question. Why does he want to be here? Shawnee, you've gravy-trained five titles to your own radio show, and now you're upset you can't make your one call a year where you save takes from the previous 364 days? Dude, don't sweat it. Although, that's impossible for you. You just sweat at the thought of walking. I went to your station website the other day and saw a picture of you there. As Clark Griswold told Cousin Eddie, you're looking fit. Shawnee, let's just hope that your career rivals Jim's in the radio business and not JT the Shtick. I caught some of his show recently. I mean, wow. 1,000 calls a show is good radio? Really? What I heard was basically radio anthrax. I would have loved to hear your takes, if you had any. Do you even talk? Is it possible to be the host of a national radio show and not actually host their national radio show? I will say, though, the best part about the show is at least you're not insecure at all about being associated with the jungle. I mean, it's killing you that most people still see you as the first Smack-Off winner rather than a national talk show host. Totally can't tell by listening to your show.
Carbone. Straight fire from Steve Carbone. I mean, again, this is what I keep saying whenever I play back any of these old calls. They all stand the test of time. That call still holds more than a decade after he made it. Now, you might think that ripping on the XR4 Ti is a new thing since we went to a simulcast. It's not. It's not. It's a time-honored tradition. One that Carbone helped carry on his back when Kyle Brandt first got to the show back in the day.
Since there's a new member of the crew, I got to welcome him in, Kyle Brandt. With a resume like yours, Kyle, you're going to be a lifer there. I mean, tell me exactly how did playing the role of Philip Kiriakis on Days of Our Lives prepare you for life in the jungle? Days of Our Lives? Did you miss the Passions casting call? This is fascinating. Dude, I watched every episode of The Real World Chicago. And you know why? Because it's so real. I mean, how could someone not be glued to the TV with those two slut bags, Kara and Tanya, running around banging every guy in Chicago on a weekly basis? I envy you, man. Seriously. I can't believe MTV gave you a personal assistant to frost your tips and spray tan you down every morning. That is awesome. Dude, Ryan Seacrest called. He wants his metrosexualness back.
Hey, Ike, you feeling better about you? You see, it's a rite of passage. Even KB. Even KB, like, the most talented guy ever to roll through here had to wear it back in the day. But then again, thanks to Stevie Carbone, almost everybody had to wear it for the past 20 years. Roll it, Alvy.
Rick Riley retired the way Vince Young retired. He didn't. They didn't want you anymore, Riley, and the brass decided that paying a guy $40 million to be a Twitter plagiarizer, probably a bit too much. I mean, I'm sorry to hear that your dad drank a lot, Rick, but now you know how the rest of us feel when we watched your work. Vic, your ego is out of control. You have the same number of titles as me. One, you are, well, me, with 20,000 less Twitter followers. Last year, Vic, you said you were straight-up carving fools. Son, the only carving you will ever be doing the rest of your life is your name into the walls of Cell Block C at San Quentin.
And Andy Roddick giving me his take on anything other than being a giant American tennis failure. Andy, the only thing anyone cares to hear you talk about is your wife. Please do more of it, because I'm certainly more interested in her doubles than yours. I'm in the same field as Lef in Laguna Beach. Lef. I don't know if that's short for Lef out of any social circles as a child, or left at home a lot alone, wondering where mommy and daddy went. Did you see the gear that Berman was rocking at the U.S. Open a couple weeks ago? A short sleeve shirt and a tie. If I didn't know any better, I could have sworn I saw him that weekend biking around my neighborhood wanting me to open my eyes up to the Church of Latter-day Saints. Nice outfit.
The dork who doesn't blink, John Brankus. Hey, Brankus, tell me how Brad and Corona can drive on the 91 freeway in his convertible Volkswagen Rabbit with winds reaching speeds of up to 100 miles per hour, yet when coming to a complete stop, none of the guy's hair follicles have moved and his guy liner hasn't started running down his face. Trapper in the first hour, Oren in the second hour. Gotta make my mind up. Switch call sucks the worst. It's Friday, Friday. Smoking fools on Friday. Punk asses wish they could join me on my Vegas trip. Vegas trip. Friday, Friday. Smoking fools on Friday. I'm gonna make love to all your girlfriends. These guys are all worthless, yeah. Hoping to be famous, yeah. Punk, 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 punk. Get alive, losers. Rise and fire.
Rise and fire, Stevie Carbone. Let's not forget also, Stevie Carbone was a member of the XR4TI for a number of years and did great work. Steve Carbone knew more about sports than anybody who sat on that side of the glass. He dominated that before going on to create his own genre. 1 week until Smackoff 25. He has been in the event more than anybody else. He has got a strap already. If he shows up, it's going to be a milestone for him, and you never know. I mean, he's got to look at that thing every single time. That will be a record-setting 20th call if he shows up. Stevie, really hope to see you a week from today. You never know with Steve. Hit him up on Twitter. Let him know you heard the profile. React to the profile. Smoking fools on Friday. Hayden Hurst is joining us. Listen, you and I talked last year, and we talked about your journey and some of the challenges along the way. Last month, you spent time visiting schools, and you were talking to students about mental health. Why was that something that you want to talk to kids about?
Well, for me and my family, it's something that kind of hits home with us. In 2006, my uncle took his life, and 2 years later, his son took his life. So mental health and suicide prevention is something that hits really home with the Hurst family. I struggled with my own issues, you know, my 3 years in professional baseball after high school. So it's something that we really want, you know, to continue this discussion on. It's a topic that not many people enjoy talking about. You know, you kind of mention mental health to people and they get, you know, a little weird about it. But, you know, it's something that I'm not afraid to talk about. It's what has made me and shaped me into who I am. So, you know, if I can continue the conversation and bring light to it, you know, that's the goal.
You know, I appreciate that and I respect that so much. Hayden Hurst is my guest. What do you think it means for a kid to see a big football player standing in front of them talking about mental health? And what are you hoping they'll take away from it?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of my whole, you know, conversation when I talk to these kids. If they can see, you know, this big NFL tight end, you know, football player, hey, he has mental health issues too, and that's something that I can relate to. You know, I can seek help if he can. And I think that's the biggest message I try to get across to these kids is just ask for help. You know, it's perceived as a weakness right now, but it's absolutely not. You know, it was the best thing I ever did for myself to reach out for help. I was able to kind of change my life and take me down this path where I'm at now.
We're talking to Hayden Hurst. You know, I wonder, one of your messages is just that it's okay to not be okay. It sounds really simple, but what was the process like for you to learn that?
Oh, wow. It took me about 3 or 4 years, you know, to finally reach out and seek help. But I think the biggest thing is when it starts affecting your social life and the person who God intended you to be, that's when you need to seek help and you need to ask for help and reach out for somebody. For me, it was my family. They've always been my support system forever and ever, and they always will be. But just if you start feeling off or anything like that, just reach out for help because there's so many people out there that want to help you.
See, Hayden, the thing is, I've got two teenage sons, and we talk about this all the time as a family. You really don't know what these kids are dealing with. Let me finally ask you, like, what would you say to somebody right now who is dealing with their mental health and they're feeling like they're all alone and they really don't know where to turn or what to do?
Well, first things first, you're not alone. Everybody battles through their own issues. You know, everybody fights their own fight. And I don't think when you're in that, you do feel alone and you don't feel like there's anyone there for you. Because trust me, I know that feeling. I've been through it. And by no means does this mean that I'm over it. It's something that I deal with to this day. But I've definitely had different methods to kind of help me with it and get through it. Again, my family, through journaling. But I promise you, there's people out there that care about you and genuinely want to help and see you succeed.
He is entering his second season. He is a tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. He was a first-team All-SEC-er. Baltimore coming off a 10-6 season. He's a man on a mission. Hayden Hurst, my guest. Hayden, really good to have you back. Appreciate that conversation a lot, man. Great talking to you.
Yes, sir, Mr. Realm. Thank you so much.
Say, I've got a question for you. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? If so, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, grief, self-esteem, and even more. You can connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. Anything that you share is confidential and it's so convenient. So get help at your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. If you're not happy with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time and no additional charge. And best of all, it is a truly affordable option and you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/Rome. So why not get started right now? Go to betterhelp.com/Rome, simply fill out a questionnaire, and get matched up with a counselor that you are going to love. Once again, betterhelp.com/Rome.
Dude, you're so confused. Either way, just go ahead. Dude, go ahead, dude. Rome.
Back in the jungle. What's going on? A tremendous Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to be back. Welcome to the program. Now, I was off on Thursday and Friday. I went to New York. I had some business there. A lot has happened since I was last in this seat. But here's something that did not change. The Toronto Raptors. These dudes love the taste of their own blood. They got punched in the face in game 2 in their own building, and they have been landing haymakers of their own ever since. They're an absolute machine.
Yeah! Kevin Durant. You know who I am.
I'm not going to question this guy's tough. toughness. I'm not going to question this guy's willingness to play through what he's dealing with. I think a lot of you have an amazing threshold for his pain. Dan Wojcicki joining us.
It's really kind of a lose-lose for him, Jim, at this point. If he plays poorly, people will blame him. If he plays well, people will be like, why wasn't he out here for games 3 and 4?
I still check. I'm like a dinosaur. I don't want the suit getting all jacked up, so I check it.
Check it.
Went to the Talkers convention. We spent an hour backstage with Bill O'Reilly.
We'll do it live!
Patrick Cantlay.
And I'm going to wake up at the beginning of the day and decide today I'm going to do everything I possibly can. And I just strung together day after day after day of that.
Email.
Fred Van Vliet lost a tooth. Justin Bieber is going to lose all his teeth. Signed Tom Cruise.
That's right.
I am Michael Jordan. You are Harold Miner.
That's the guy who used to be really good at calling a radio show.
Rich Ackerman looked horrible, man. That neck, man. What the hell is that? He needs circumcised at some bit.
Sports Flash.
Bobby, what's with that? This report.
If you don't want me to watch the ball, you can go get it out of the ocean.
Don't watch the ball run is incredible. Like, it makes me laugh every time. Whatever you say, Don Drysdale. Alex Verdugo.
Like, I would understand if he stood in the box, it landed into the, you know, the ocean, and then he ran. It looked fine to me.
Durant's hurt. He's hurt. He's hobbling off.
The moment Kevin Durant went down, it wasn't just bad. It was the worst, and everybody knew it. Absolutely sickening.
You can blame me. I run our basketball operations.
And Myers is as real as they come. Those were not crocodile tears. This is a guy who cares about his players. That has never been in doubt.
So trash.
It is elk o'clock.
G'day, Jimmy. I was walking down number 3, mate, right out of the gate. Big crowd following Ricky and these guys. And this guy in front of me goes, doesn't know I'm there. He says, oh, I just read on the internet that Elk's going to be on Roman. And then he goes, how many times do you think he's going to say heavy muff in the interview?
That was rude. You're not making the world a better place. What show do you think you're listening to? I almost brought back nice radio. Nice. So let's go to Mike radio in St. Louis.
But I'd really like to wish the Boston Bruin fans a really, really nice day. Since they ruined our party on Game 6, we'd like to ruin theirs on Game 7.
Ruin does not suggest nice. Why would you want to ruin anything?
It was just unacceptable.
You tell me what's more humiliating. The U.S. national team playing the game hard until the end, or the U.S. national team and their coach coming over to give them hugs. Like they're 8-year-olds. The World Cup, not the World Hug.
It's the World Cup.
Adam Jones.
What's happening, partner?
Adam, it has been a long time since you and I spoke. How you doing, man? How's life?
Oh, man. When I got your request, I was like, oh, I got to talk to Rome. It's been some years, brother. How you been?
My man.
Somebody probably got fired over it or should.
For all the talk about Tiger returning to Pebble, Phil trying again to finish off that career Grand Slam.
Hefty.
It somehow does feel like Brooks is going under the radar. Harrison Smith. Bill Belichick said this of you. Smith, Ed Reed, Polamalu. Those guys are, I'd say, among the best.
I kind of took it with a grain of salt. You know, I didn't know if he was kind of setting me up. Wanted me to try to disguise a little more because he had something for me.
Hi, good show, dude.
Whose idea was that?
Chris was wondering.
If I ever get into the Radio Hall of Fame, I may give the honor to whoever it was who set that interview up and got telephone calls.
Did you kill Bill Walsh?
Going into Boston and punking them the way they did to win their first Stanley Cup ever in a Game 7 situation is the very definition of stones. How y'all live in St. Louis? Mike in St. Louis.
Everybody is losing their blipping minds. You know, those players. I'm thinking about a lot of things as a St. Louis Blue fan today. Ask me anything.
All right. How's it feel to get run? 49ers GM John Lynch, my guest. You lost Jimmy Garoppolo. How does he look to you?
He looks really good. If there's any blessing in having your running back, Jerick McKinnon, go out with an ACL before the season, is that Jimmy had a partner to go through this with.
Where do you get your donuts? Krispy Kreme, react to me. Dunkin' Winchell. What is that funky place in Portland? Voodoo Donuts. Randy's in Inglewood. Not about the sprinkles. They're whack.
That's whack.
The Toronto Raptors are
the
NBA
Toronto Raptors
champions.
Are the NBA champions. Why don't we take a moment for Kawhi Leonard and for all you dopes because you thought that he wasn't tough. He is a two-time NBA champion and a two-time Finals MVP. Marinate on that.
Turned down for what?
Come again?
Nothing.
What?
Well, Vic, it seems that Poppy has been doing things he shouldn't be doing with his pee-pee.
Kellen Winslow has his eyes set on Mona.
The cowboy hat is just a visual distraction that cowboy uses so cowboy's woman won't look down and notice cowboy can't dance.
I love every single bit of this stuff.
Or the North.
Did you kill Bill Walsh?
Well, okay.
You never walked in my shoes.
I am the chopper.
Some exultation language.
Beaver pelts and flannel.
Come on, bro. Bro.
That's that so good.
Spud nuts.
Does Alvin DeLauro have the balls to include this call?
Wait.
Good night now.
Reed Forgrave is my guest. Reed, good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, I'm good. There's literally no better way to celebrate the end of a pretty wild NBA season than to come home and talk with the greatest radio guy there's ever been. And yet, you know, the feeling, despite the Raptors doing something absolutely incredible over the past 2 months, over the past 12 months, there's that feeling of celebration is really tempered by the, let's call it what it is, man. It was a tragedy. What happened to the Golden State Warriors over the past 4 or 5 days?
My man, you set that thing up perfectly, exactly where I want to go. So let me ask you this first, Reed. Wild, wild, wild night. How would you describe the atmosphere in Oracle last night at the start of the game and then in the final minutes of the fourth quarter?
The loudest I had ever been in an NBA arena, or frankly, any basketball arena. And I'm talking, you know, Duke, North Carolina, Cameron Indoor in overtime. The loudest I'd ever been was when Giannis missed, airballed the free throw in the first quarter at Scotiabank Arena. I think it was in game 5 or something like that, game 4 maybe. And I was like, oh, no arena can get louder than that. Well, guess what? Oracle last night at the beginning of the game was the loudest I'd ever seen. Couldn't hear yourself think. And then when Klay Thompson came out of the tunnel, you know, nobody knows what happened to him. It looked like an awful injury at the moment. And then to see him come back out Willis Reed style, that place was just going absolutely berserk. They didn't know exactly what the injury was in the fourth quarter when the game ends. You don't know the specifics of this. You know that it certainly could be bad. But to be honest, the most raw reaction that I saw last night was from my Uber driver, a guy who lived in Oakland his entire life, a guy who had been a Warriors fan for 47 years. And I was the one who told him that Klay Thompson tore his ACL, and he almost drove off the road. He was genuinely deeply hurt. Like the feeling of loss for the city of Oakland, not just losing their Warriors. I know they're just going across the bay, but Oakland and San Fran are just two completely different places. The feeling of loss, just losing their team, losing their arena, and then coupling that with KD and Klay, I mean, the emotional roller coaster this fan base has been on this whole season, frankly, but especially these past few days, it's not unlike anything I've ever seen in covering professional sports.
Reed Forgrave joining us. You know, I want to stay on that topic for 1 minute. I mean, the injuries, of course, were such a major storyline in that series, and not just Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson, but even Kawhi Leonard coming back from his injury in San Antonio. So knowing that, I want to be very careful about hyping a player's toughness because it's a pretty challenging or tricky narrative. That said, just about Klay, what's it say about Klay that he tears his ACL, he does head down the tunnel, he comes back out, he takes his foul shots, he makes them, and then he runs back to play defense?
Yeah, he's like, don't worry, I got this, guys. You know what he said to Steve Kerr after they pulled him out of that play? He goes back to the bench, there's 2 minutes left in the third quarter, and he's like, I just need 2 minutes of rest, I'll be back in. This is on a torn ACL. The dude goes back towards the locker room, he's in the hallway, and he's doing jumping jacks to keep warmed up. It took Bob Myers, frankly, to be like, yo, Klay, you have to go to the locker room now. You cannot be on the bench. You are hurt. I mean, it says everything that his teammates have been saying about Klay Thompson for years. Like, he's a definition of a warrior, not a Golden State warrior, but like a true warrior. I'm glad that you bring that up about like hyping up the oh, he can fight through injury and oh, it's toughness and all that. I mean, we've seen it in football the last 10 years, how sometimes fighting through injury can give you very serious issues now and later in life. But what Klay did with that huge caveat in there of maybe you shouldn't always play through injuries, it just says so much about that dude's character. He's just an absolute assassin, and you have to assume. It's not easy. The mental part of recovering from these types of injuries, it's not easy, but you have to assume that he attacks this ACL injury and this recovery with that exact same gusto.
Reed Forgrave joining us. All right, so let's go back to Kawhi for a minute. Everybody knows that this is not the most effusive guy ever, but you asked him a question after the game that I thought elicited a very interesting response. You asked him how the last few years have changed him as a person. What did he tell you, and what does that tell you about him?
Man, I thought that it was an absolutely compelling answer. We think of Kawhi as just this big blank slate, this black box of nothingness, and I think there are deep wells of empathy and deep thought inside of this guy. He just doesn't want to answer the dumb questions from the media. He's not particularly comfortable with that. He's an introvert. When I asked him that question, it was, you know, how did the past 18 months? How has this affected your family, the way you view yourself as a man and your faith? His answer, I thought, was fascinating. He basically said, look, last year I got dragged through the mud. My name got dragged through the mud. People saying I quit on my team. People saying I was faking an injury. And he's like, I heard all that. And what I learned is that I just need to be true to myself, just keep my head down. Essentially, just be a good man and good things will happen to you. I mean, if you remember the narrative on Kawhi Leonard a year ago, it's that this guy's a diva, that he's the worst of basketball players, that he's taking advantage of this team that has nurtured him, the best culture in the NBA over the past 25 years, and he's gonna kick them to the curb. Well, maybe Kawhi knew his body a little bit better than the Spurs doctors did, and clearly that was a fractured relationship, and whether it was Kawhi or whether it was the Spurs, or most likely both sides, they didn't want to swallow their pride. But I do think that Kawhi has truly become a real man over the past 18 months and is a better man for it. This is a guy who is better because of the stuff that he's been through, not in spite of it. Not just the past 18 months, but you go past his whole life, a guy who's been overlooked, a guy who's been through tragedy as a child. I think he is now a fully formed, not just a fully formed superstar, and the guy that I would call right now probably the best basketball player on earth. But he is a real man who is comfortable in his own skin.
Reed Forgrave joining us. All right, so if in fact he is the best basketball player on earth, and he may very well be, you've also made the point that he's not naturally gifted in the way that LeBron is, or even like unreal as a seven-footer like Kevin Durant, or somebody who can destroy the game like Steph Curry. So how do you explain his ability to dominate games the way he does, and in fact that he might be the best player in the world?
It's frankly through like sheer force of will. Like every cliche that you can toss out there about the guy who outworks everyone else, it's completely true with Kawhi Leonard. I was writing my column last night about Kawhi Leonard being the best basketball player on earth, and I looked up his recruiting rankings. He was ranked 58th in the country coming out of high school. There were plenty of people, like the wonderful Frank Fraschilla, who saw him in high school and said, this kid is special. But he was overlooked by all the big programs. Goes to San Diego State, and he was overlooked by 14 NBA teams when he goes into the draft, decide not to pick him. The fact that he is who he is, this is not a beautiful brand of basketball. It's a very old-school brand of basketball that Kawhi Leonard plays. But it is, in a way, it's like exactly what your high school coach tells you to do. Outwork people, focus on defense first, and good things will happen to you.
Hey, Reed, one more thought about Golden State. I don't know that I've ever seen a coach quite like Steve Kerr. How would you describe his mood after that game?
Introspective, reflective, appreciative of all the good things that have happened to him, all the blessings that him and his team have experienced over the past 5 years, but devastated for the very, forget basketball, the very personal things that this team have gone through over the past several days and is going to go through over the next year. Like Steve Kerr, I know he's a politically divisive figure, but I find Steve Kerr to be one of the truly decent people in this sport, a guy who's not going to BS you. Yeah, he can get prickly from time to time, but you're always going to get an honest answer from him. The truth is, this is what is so weird about these finals is that here we have Toronto, 24 years in the NBA franchise, sort of the backwaters of basketball, and a wonderful story that they have created, that Masai Ujiri has created, that whole city has created, this incredible fan base to win their first title. And yet the most important story of all is all about the Warriors, whether that's the end of the dynasty or what happens to these two superstars with their injuries and with free agency. It sort of reminds me in a way, the last time that I can think of this from an NBA Finals was 2011 when, yeah, the Mavericks won, man, and it was awesome, and go Dirk. But the story the next day and for the next several months was about LeBron James and his failure in the biggest of stages. The story right now is about a team that defined an era of basketball, and frankly, they might be over, and you can't think of a more painful way for them to be over.
It's well said. So a final thought then about Toronto. What about Kyle Lowry? He had taken so much heat in the past. What do you make of the way he showed up in this series, and especially last night?
Just awesome. Awesome. Like the ultimate Philly point guard, a guy who's been, I don't want to like build up the me against the world thing, but let's be honest. There's one thing your average NBA fan would have said about Kyle Lowry: it's dude can't do it when it matters most. Dude did it when it matters most. He had some huge games from a scoring side this series and these entire playoffs, But in a bigger way, he was just the heart and soul of that team. The little things that he does on a basketball court, that's the reason the Raptors are who they are. Kawhi Leonard is the one who could take them to the next level, but it's Kyle Lowry who was the connective tissue for this team. And, you know, without Kyle Lowry, Toronto Raptors aren't NBA champions. That's a really cool thing to say.
He covers the NBA and college basketball for CBSSports.com. He also writes for GQ, the New York Times Magazine, and more. And again, a panelist from our TV show, our daily TV show back in the day. Reed, great job. Really nice to have you back on. And I appreciate your thoughts on all of that.
All right, my man. Thanks, Jim.
Broadway Victor. What's going on, Vic?
Hello. Hey, man. I don't know if the choice of I got five on it for the smack-off promo is some kind of subliminal message that Brad has already been preordained to win his fist, or if it means Mark in Hollywood and his gigantic receded five-head are going to win, or if it just means that Nooch and Irate Craig are going to split a dime bag of weed. All I know, Rome, is that if you thought I wasn't going to show up for the smack-off this year, then you don't know me, brother. You don't know me like I know me. You never walked in my shoes. That's some Little John Daly for you. Hey, quick sports take here. New York City hoops legend, Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket, freshman phenom, NBA veteran Kenny Anderson suffered a stroke not long ago, Rome. He's recovering very well, thank God, but my research tells me that it's not uncommon for stroke victims to lose control of their bowels, at least temporarily. Which means there's a good chance that our boy Ken is having to rock one of them disposable adult undergarments, which is fine. But I'm just worried that the idiot Dick Vitale is going to show up to visit him and be all like, oh, we got a diaper dandy. We got a diaper dandy. And I see that you're up for the Radio Hall of Fame again, Rome. I want to wish you good luck on that. Let me check really quick who else is on the list of nominees. Is there? Oh, my goodness gracious. Susan Waldman is nominated for the Hall of Fame with Jim Rome. Goodness gracious. Yeah, I don't think you have anything to worry about this year, Rome. Hey, I have a suggestion for the podcast. There's a guy I heard recently on the Joe Brogan podcast. He's got a great story about survival, and he's actually got a bit of jungle history to him, and that's Travis Barker from Blink 182. Hey, Rit, do your job. Speaking of podcasts, Rome, I know you had that Brian Koppelman guy from the TV show Billions. Have you noticed that the characters on that show are always dropping all these movie references and sports references, you know, like, oh, man, I feel like Buckner coming back to Shea, or, dude, you're like Mike McDee when he flopped the nuts against Teddy KGB. Rome, that's how you know that Koppelman really is a clone. You know, he really does listen to the show because the guy literally built an entire hit TV series just based on reverse engineering my calls to this show. Okay, I mean, geez, what's next, Koppelman? Is Bobby Axelrod going to prank call someone as Conor McGregor from Las Vegas? And by the way, Rome, I heard some clown call the other day trying to do Conor in Vegas. That's what it's come to in the jungle, man. Not only are people imitating me, now they're imitating my creations, too. Hey, you wouldn't happen to know a good IP lawyer, would you? Can you hook me up with your boy Feldman? I'm growing a bit tired of people making a name for themselves on my back. I mean, hell, Brad and Corona from day one has basically been Thomas Edison to my Nikola Tesla. I'm not hating on the guy. Hey, Thomas Edison reverse-engineered his way to fame and fortune. Good for him, and good for Brad. But, Brad, I'm still waiting to hear your epic roast of Jim Rome, brother. Or what, do you only go up against the weak little substitute hosts? Is that your deal? Finally, Rome, I know you heard about David Ortiz getting shot back home in the Dominican. Rumor has it that some local gangster put a hit on him, Poppy, because Poppy was messing around with a dude's girlfriend. Now, I'm not very well informed on this, so I'm going to give the last word on this to someone who is. This is Horatio Kane, a cop with the Miami-Dade County Crime Scene Investigation Unit who's been working the case. Take it away, Horatio.
Well, Vic, it seems that Poppy has been doing things he shouldn't be doing with his pee-pee.
Thanks, Alvin. Anytime.
You don't like that cop.
I don't like that cop. Not a very good call.
Yes, that sounds like that's an RSVP. It sounds like we'll be seeing that guy a week from right now. Lauren in Naples. Hey, Lauren, what's up?
What's up, Rome?
What's up, Lauren?
Turned down for what?
Come again?
Nothing.
That's not a good call. No.
That went pretty horribly, Lauren. You know, Lauren, I was going to play some ball. I really was. Because I never know what to expect when you call. And then you always give me exactly what I expect. But that I could tell was going to come off the rails. Like, you got out pretty quickly this morning, Lauren. But Alvin was not having it. Hey, Alvin, we could let her go a little longer. I mean, aren't you at least a bit curious why she was doing that? Where she was going with that? What she had gotten into at 10 a.m.? Jeff in Southfield. I'm hoping it's an RSVP. He is a first-year golden ticket holder. Let's see if he's going to make it through his phone call. Let's find out what he's thinking. What's up, Jeff?
Thanks for the vine, Jim. Hey, Gino in San Antonio. Detroit's entire skyline is iconic buildings by renowned architects like Albert Kahn, Ort Rowland, and Lewis Camper. San Antonio has one iconic building, the Alamo, which looks like it was designed by the architectural team from Taco Bell. Hey, Gino, Detroit's cultural contributions include the automobile, Motown Records, modern punk rock, and techno music. San Antonio's lone cultural contribution is the Alamo, which commemorates that immensely important day when America crushed Mexico in the battle for Taco Bell. Hey, Gino, the Pistons were the first NBA team to get their own airplane, to which the rest of the league said, yes, yes, we love you, Pistons, we love you. The Spurs were the first team to allow wives on team airplanes, to which the rest of the league said, no, no, I kill you, Spurs, I kill you. Face it, Gino, Detroit is more exciting than an after-hours party hosted by Eminem and Kid Rock. San Antonio is about as exciting as an after-hours party hosted by Tim Duncan and David Robinson. And Detroit has soul. Detroit has more soul than an Aretha Franklin concert. San Antonio has less soul than a country western bar. Hey, country western bar, you need to rename your dance floor the We're Too Stiff to Dance Floor, since all I see you doing on it is walking. I see you walking forward 5 steps, walking backward 5 steps, and walking sideways 5 steps. Hey, cowboy, in Detroit, walking ain't dancing. I haven't seen such stiff nonsense since Dancing with the Stars featured Calvin Johnson. Seriously, Jim, I wasn't sure why the women of country western bars put up with that crap until I figured out what the cowboy hat really is. Turns out the cowboy hat is just a visual distraction that cowboy uses so cowboy's woman won't look down and notice cowboy can't dance. Gino, San Antonio is so lame, you turned down a chance to have your own show on San Antonio radio for a job taking family portraits because the family portrait job got you out of San Antonio. Really, Gino? San Antonio sucks that much you'd give up a career in professional broadcasting with your own show so you can spend your days in the family portrait studio calming down screaming toddlers by jamming a Barney the Dinosaur puppet on your mitten? Nice life choice, Gino. Way to show the way for trail avoiders like Robert Dosmati, Gino. Hey, Gino, take Barney the Dinosaur's eyes off that toddler for a moment and point them right at yours while he mouths the following words at you. Hey, Gino, if you show up for Smack Off 25, you're showing up with Detroit's tread tattooed on your face, fool. I'll see you next Friday, Jim.
I will see you next Friday, Jeff in Southfield. Let's go to Gino. Gino in San Antonio. Hey, Gino, how'd that feel?
Oh, man, maybe I'm just getting old, but I love every single bit of this stuff. And I don't care if I'm the target or Caleb's rolls of fat are the target. I really don't care. It's all funny and it's all awesome. Hey, Jeff in Southfield, do you know that Southfield's lone contribution to the United States of America is incest? Dude, that was awesome. I don't know if your smack about cowboys had anything to do with San Antonio. We're like 95% Mexican, so whatever, bro. But, Rome, the reason I called in today wasn't to listen to the parody of Jeff and Richmond go off about me. I wanted to talk about this revisionist history about Kawhi Leonard and how the Spurs fans owe him an apology. I'm going to say, you know what? Congratulations, Raptors. I can't say one bad thing about Kawhi this season. There's nothing bad you could say about the Raptors. You guys earned it. I don't care what happened to the other team. You earned this title. There's no asterisk. But let's stop acting like Kawhi Leonard wasn't hiding from Popovich last year in a room when Pop was coming to see Kawhi's doctor to see what was going on. Let's stop acting like the Spurs tried to jam Kawhi onto the court, which they never did. He never played one quarter of basketball when he didn't want to, and nobody in the Spurs organization tried to make him. He was a scared coward last year. Maybe he learned his lesson and he manned up this year. If so, good for you, Kawhi. I hope you really did learn a life lesson. I think the person you are now might be because of what you did last year, and maybe you learned something from it. But let's not act like Spurs fans don't have a right to be pissed off at Kawhi for the rest of his NBA career. Later, Rome.
You got it, Gino. Thank you very much. Silk. What's up, brah?
What is up, brah?
What's going on, Silk?
Dude, an asterisk on my smack-off win? You bet it don't. Brah. First full day of summer vacation for your boy, brah. I am basking in the glow of a beautiful charcuterie session last night with some fine grape juice, brah. I'm digging this. But hearing your player profile of Carbone got me riled up. And I reached out to my guy, Rich Flores. And, of course, you know, he advises me on all things. So I figured I better call the show. But I do kind of want to level an accusation at you guys. And I don't do this lightly because – you know, I love the show, of course, but I got a sneaking suspicion that you guys are in the tank for Jay Stu this year. I think you guys are setting it up for him to win. And the reason I think this is because I was listening earlier and, you know, Jay Stu has that porn addiction and I find out the Smack Off is sponsored by Vivid Video, brah. What is this, 1987? Come on, brah. Listen, I want transparency here. I'm going to send my guy Rich Flores down there to check this out. Now, Carbone, you know, he went from this skinny kid from Loyola Marymount begging me for my autograph in the Dodger Stadium parking lot and, you know, trying to weasel in on our Dodger tickets with me and Ira. And now he's cracking on me. Come on, Stevie. By the way, I saw him and Jay Stu on Instagram peacocking on some rooftop in Vegas. And listen, no one's going to mistake me for Kate Moss, brah. But come on, Carbone, brah. The Texas lifestyle has been good to you, bruh. I mean, he watches TV for a living and he's cracking on me. Listen, bruh, I got a social life, man. I have a career. He watches TV for a living. I mean, good for, you know, great work if you can get it, bruh. Now, listen, this party in Dana Point is going to be so killer, bruh. The Laguna Cliffs, I'm not going to give him a plug, bruh, but there's a nice hotel in Dana Point. A lot of us are staying there. It's going to be killer, bruh. There's going to be so many people there. I've already brought my retired hockey gloves for when Fabian tries to fist crack me. I may have to drop him, brah. But listen up. It's going to be awesome. I'll try to hit you up this week, too, if there are any new things pop up. I'll be, brah, summer vacation. Let's do this. Come on, brah. 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 Come on.
Let's go to SoCal. Jeff in SoCal. Hey, Jeff, what's up? How are you?
Rome, I'm great. Hey, man, it's a sad, sad day for Warrior Nation. Those poor bandwagon fans did not sign up for this, but at least their Patriots did win the Super Bowl this year, so they have that going. It was an incredible series, Rome, but here's what I'm most impressed with. KD tears his Achilles and walks off the court with a grimace. Then you have Klay tearing his ACL, comes back out, and shoots free throws. Meanwhile, your EP, Adam Hawk, looks worse than both of them and was almost in tears at mile 13 of the marathon this year. Step your game up, Hawk. A lot of people are out here making predictions for their smack-off winner while everyone is talking left, Rick, or Brad. Kellen Winslow has his eyes set on Mona. Seems like his kind of girl, if you catch my drift.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Kellen Winslow has his eyes on Mona, if you catch my drift. Hey, you know what, Jeff? I do catch your drift. You're suggesting that Kellen Winslow is considering molesting or assaulting an old lady. Is he being accused of doing so? Hey, Jeff, see if you catch my drift. You are no longer invited to the Smack Off. Hey, Jeff, have you ever heard this sound before? Do you know what that is the sound of? That's the sound of you having a golden ticket in your hand snatched out of it and put back into my pocket. You were invited, and now you're uninvited, just as you knew you would be, because there's no way you thought that was going to play. There's no way you thought that was funny. Let's see what's up. Chad in L.A. Hey, Chad, what's up with you?
Oh, thanks for that soothing call, Jace, too. Maybe someone can give him a rip of whatever Jeff in Southfield is on. What a clown. Rome, I know it's been a while. I wanted to apologize for my smack-off call last year. The plan was to deliver my call on the fly to show you guys how quick-witted I am, but I guess I showed you how dim-witted I am. What do you guys expect? I'm a clone, where the average IQ of my demographic is a poop emoji. I have no excuses, Rome. I'm sorry. Now, if you don't mind, I've got a few things on my mind. For starters, dude, Smackoff is turning 25? Congrats, man. I'd bring my birthday suit, but mine has a hole in it. Hey, Rome, has Caleb in Green Bay ever cried over spilled milk? Like, literally? Probably not, actually. I can tell a corn-fed heifer when I see one. Suey! Can't wait to hear Benny yell through his call next week. Dude became famous for making rat puns, but on Smackoff Day, he gets all angry and loud. Stay in your lane, Benny. No matter how angry you sound, in spite of your rage, you're still just a rat in a cage. And how dumb is Mike in Indy going to look when he doesn't get offered his money and ends up calling in anyway? Might as well. Dude's been gone from the jungle so long, he probably thinks Kryptonite is when his wannabe gangster buddies come to his house for a sleepover. Lastly, Rome, I hate Brad and Corona. Can't stand him. All metro and stupid. You know you're metro when before you take pictures in your underwear, you have to last a full month without shaving your legs. Brad's so metro, he should get a job at the post office. Did you ever notice how at the post office all the guys have long hair and the girls have short hair? He's perfect for that job, because I can never tell if he's rocking a box or a...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Chad, I guess a little bit better than your smack-off call, but not much. Not much.
Good night now!